views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Reclaim your power and learn to live your most amazing life with Mike Murphy Unfiltered Radio. Unfettered, unflinching, unafraid. Tune in every Thursday from noon to 2 Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Mike explores authentic and relevant truth and powerful conversations with some of the world's most renowned game changers. This hit show taps the dynamic principles of the creation frequency to unleash unlimited infinite potential and guide you to manifesting the highest possibilities of your heart. Level up your life and rewire your programming. Think new thoughts and create true freedom. Let's expand energy, build true health and explosive frequency consciousness together. Powerful people, powerful conversations, powerful listeners. Infinite possibilities, fostering peace and joy with an unfiltered heart. Now, here's Mike Murphy, unfiltered.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mike Murphy Unfiltered Show. And of course, I'm Mike Murphy, and welcome. We're so glad that you're here, and we're excited, especially about today's show. Have you ever thought about writing a book? Have you ever wondered what it would be like? And if you did, what you would do with it? Well, we're fortunate today. We have an amazing author. Her name is Ellen Daly. She started a company in 2006 called Co-Creative Writing. And she is brilliant in her work and in what she does. So she will lay out what it is to be a ghostwriter, how you lay out a book, and what makes it powerful. And she's brilliant at what she's done. And she's worked with some really smart people and published some really great books. So you're going to learn a lot. If you want to write a book, if you should write a book, what are the reasons to write a book? And then what are you going to do with it after you write it? So in the second hour today, we're going to bring in a gentleman by the name of Mark Allen. And he has a publishing company called New World Library that he started a whole long time ago with a woman named Shotki Garwain, and who recently just passed away, unfortunately, but just a brilliant, spiritual, special soul. And so is Mark. And he's a great author in his own right. And one of his books really helped me about 15 years ago. And he's a brilliant author. He's a great publisher. And he has a philosophy that's a little different than mine. He really believes in the law of attraction and manifesting, but he tries to do it without working too hard. So he's got something on me there because I think he practices what he preaches. And so he has a beautiful life. He lives in Marin County. He's a great publisher. He's a great speaker and does workshops and just a brilliant man. You're going to learn a lot in the second hour today. So we're just so super excited to have these two wonderful people. And so we're going to bring Ellen on in just a few moments, but before, just a few announcements that I have. One, thank you guys so much. This show is like blowing my mind. How many views we're getting, how many people are checking in. The comments are really super good. Last show, I think after we aired it on Facebook Live, there was like 1,000 views. It's up to 13,000 views right now. So I love how it's spreading. That was such a powerful show, and glad you could join us. So we just want more feedback from you, you know, so if you're on Facebook Live, leave us some comments, ask us questions. If you're not on Facebook Live, you can email me at mike@mikemurphyunfiltered.com. I'd love to know what you're thinking. I'd love to get some ideas on future shows. We're pretty much open to anything that will help improve the quality of your life and help to improve the quality of your family's life. So it could be around food, nutrition, spirituality, exercise people. We've had some amazing guests so far. So my whole purpose in this show is one, to bring information to you that's going to enhance the quality of your life and give you tools and techniques to take your life to another level and become the best version of yourself, not only for you, but for your family. And in doing so, we all can make the world a little better place. And that's what it desperately needs right now. So, you know, and also you can find me on Facebook, Mike Murphy Author. You can go to my YouTube channel, Mike Murphy Unfiltered. Please subscribe. We can send you updates. And at MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com, just sign up to get our weekly podcast from the show, and we'll email them to you every week, and you just be part of the family. So super excited to be doing the show. Very grateful for all the fine people that have helped, and especially for you, the viewer and the listener. So this show is sponsored by, we have one sponsor currently, by The Creation Frequency, which is a book I wrote that actually Ellen co-wrote with me, and is doing quite well in sales. But we also, to give it even more power, we created an online course called The Creation Frequency. And to learn more, you can go to creationfrequency.com and learn all about it. But basically, it's the process of the law of attraction and manifestation that was taught to me in the early 80s by a powerful man by the name of Doug Fitzgerald. I refer to him in the book as the mystery man, because when I wrote my first book, I couldn't remember his name. But he taught me the law of attraction in a way I've never seen it taught before. We use the power of imagination, visualization, writing an intention or the outcome of our life as if it already exists, because he taught me there's no difference between imagination or reality. So then we write this powerful intention. And then the magic formula or sauce is that we've created an app. It's free at iTunes. It's free at Google Play. And of course, in the 80s, when he taught me this, we didn't have apps, but he taught me using music, sound of theta, brainwave music, to pierce through the conscious mind, get into the subconscious mind where all the superpower takes place, and really to be able to manifest everything I truly desired. And at that time, my life was a complete mess and I was going nowhere fast. And by using his technique and what he taught me, I was able to manifest one, a great abundance of wealth, health, and beautiful relationships and a fantastic life. Is it easy all the time? No, sometimes life can be difficult, but it's a million times better than where I was headed and what it would have been like. So I want that for you. So I have a special offer for you. The course sells for $397. But if you go to thecreationfrequency.com and you enter promo code radio, all caps, RADIO, we'll take $200 off the price, and your price will only be $197. Plus, you get the app for free. And then we take that money and we use it to buy more airtime to spread this message. And then we donate $100 in your name to our nonprofit foundation, which is called the Love for Margot Foundation. And we work historically with women below the poverty line while they battle cancer. But recently, we've expanded to work with youth, especially youth that comes out of juvenile delinquency system or foster care, or youth that are at risk, you know, especially we're in Oakland, which, you know, there's some tough areas there. So we try to take these kids and we teach them how to go out into the world and to create a job, to get a job. So we teach them how to interview, how to shake a hand, how to look someone in the eye, but we're also Apple certified. So we teach them all the Apple products technology. And we also teach them, I own a car dealership across the street, a Volkswagen dealership. So we bring over technicians. We teach them how to work on cars, fix cars, sell cars. We also teach them how to make videos and make audio. So it's a beautiful community center that we started in Oakland. And so if you buy the course, we'll donate $100 in your name, and you can help us help others and be richly blessed like we are. So with no further ado, I'd like to bring on Ellen Daly. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm super excited, you know, and for the audience, at full disclosure, Ellen co-wrote my first two books. First one is Love Unfiltered, came out in 2014. And last May, we published The Creation Frequency. We've also written together one beautiful book, a memoir, which was the only book I really wanted to write, but we haven't published it yet. And Ellen was so awesome writing this book that we're both the co-authors on this book now. And I can't wait to get it published. So hopefully we'll have it out for this Christmas, because it's a beautiful, beautiful love story about courage. A young woman with amazing courage that literally, before my very eyes, transcended death and transcended suffering. So a little more about Ellen. Ellen is a highly sought after collaborative writer who works with thought leaders, business people, and experts to turn innovative ideas into influential books. Since founding Co-Creative Writing in 2006, she has played a role in the writing and publication of more than 30 titles. Her book proposals have garnered publishing deals with all of the big five New York publishers, and her writing consistently wins praise from literary agents and editors. And Esther Perel, who just wrote a New York Times bestseller with Ellen called The State of Affairs, said, "If ever I've seen a genius at work, You Are It, in referring to you, Ellen. And John Mackey, who founded Whole Foods for supermarkets or food stores, said, I doubt this book would have been half as good as it turned out without Ellen Daly. And of course, my testimony, which such a sweet, beautiful person with a big heart, a big soul, but always professional, always there, always on time, and brilliant. She takes my like stuff that comes out of my mouth and my head and then puts it into elegant prose. And she's very, very good at that. So, Ellen, let me ask you a question. Why would someone use a ghostwriter as opposed to writing the book themselves?
Well, that's a great question. And I may need to preface it by saying that I often don't use the term ghostwriter when I'm talking to potential clients, because it tends to raise this specter, to use a deliberate pun, of, you know, something a little shady, where you might, you know, you're sort of just paying somebody else to go off and write your book for you, and it doesn't feel quite legitimate. And a lot of people fear that that would mean the book would be less than theirs and perhaps not representative of their true voice and their message. I more commonly use the term collaborative writer, although if you ask anybody who brands themselves a ghostwriter what they do, the job description will likely be quite similar to mine. But I like the term collaborative writer because it always is a collaboration, whatever form that may take. And I think people work with me for a number of reasons, or somebody like me. Sometimes it's just simply that they don't consider themselves to really have the writing skills to sit down and write a book. That might be one obvious reason. They may have a really powerful message or a really great story to share, but they just don't think that they have the skill to turn it into a book. Yeah. Other people might have that skill, but they don't really have the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to work with people who have really important missions in the world, just like you do, or someone like John Mackey, a client of mine who I worked on two books with. You know, he's running Whole Foods Market. He doesn't have the year or more that it often takes to sit at a computer and write a book. It's a big, big commitment of time. So oftentimes the people I work with are just simply people who are busy and dedicated to their work, and they want to get a book out there, and it's an important part of their work, but it can't be the only thing they're doing. So they see working with a collaborator as a way to do it all.
You know, but I totally get what you're saying, because just a few weeks ago, we had this really brilliant author by the name of Greg Reed on, and he's published tons of books like The Millionaire Mentor, sold tons of copies, right? But he has a different approach. You know, he writes books on topics that people are interested in, but he finds a ghostwriter like you or someone to co-create this book with him so he can take his time to go out and do other things, which I think is brilliant. And that's why I went this route, just for time.
Yeah. So it's often a matter of time. Also, some people, they just think and work better in collaboration. You mentioned Esther Perel, who's one of my favorite clients I've worked with. I certainly wasn't what you would call a traditional ghostwriter for her. When she first approached me, I was very surprised, because I've read her work and I know she's a brilliant writer. She can probably write a more beautiful sentence than I can. But her thinking process and her creative process simply function better in collaboration. And she liked to have somebody else to think through the ideas with, and particularly to help her stay on track and help her create structure.
But it's the old saying that two heads are better than one. And that's what I found in this process. We got to take a quick break, but when we get back, I want to ask Ellen, I'm curious. Okay. So you do all this great work for other people. What's in it for you? Obviously you have a lack of ego and you're not doing it for the pride and all that. So I want to explore that with you when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us today, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mike Murphy Unfiltered Show, and we're so grateful that you're here. I'm excited to have our special guest, Ellen Daly, here with us today, who's just a wonderful writer and a brilliant business person and is really building a great career for herself. I've known Ellen now for like 5 years, and she's just zooming to the top of her industry, and it's exciting. So when we left you guys, I was going to ask Ellen when we came back, so you write for other people, so your name's not on the cover of the book. So tell me about that. What's that like for you?
That's a great question. It's never been a great ambition of mine to have my name on the cover of a book. So I'm not sort of a failed author who couldn't make it on my own and therefore started writing with other people. I started out more as an editor. I love collaboration. I really enjoy the you know, the partnerships I have with my clients. That being said, you know, at times I've had a client offer to put my name on the cover like you did with the memoir. And these days I'm starting to have more and more the experience that that's an option. So I enjoy that, especially when I'm proud of the book. I'm happy to have my name on the cover. But more than that, you know, as a writer, being a collaborator is a wonderful way to make a living. Everyone knows it's hard to make a living as a writer. And I think of all the professions I know, of all the variations of the writing profession I know, besides the handful of rare people who can be super successful authors, being a collaborator is a great way to make a good living and have a wonderful, flexible business. And I think one in which I get to learn and work with amazing people. You know, to me, that's one of the best benefits of the job, is that every book is a new learning experience. Every collaboration is a new relationship to explore. And I really enjoy that.
Should everybody write a book? Let's say I come to you and, you know, I say, hey, here's my concept. Here's what I want to write. What do you say? Something, if you just think that's not going to fly, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I don't think everybody should write a book. You know, some people say everyone has a book in them. I don't think they do, but a lot of people do. I try to be as honest with people as I can about whether their book has commercial potential, one. Because if you want to publish with a traditional publisher, get a publishing deal, have some publisher pay you in advance and invest in your book, they've got to believe that it can sell. And that's a hard thing to convince any publisher of these days. They're extremely risk averse. So the last thing I want to do is have somebody, you know, contract with me and pay me a lot of money only to hit up against a wall the minute they start trying to sell the book to a publisher.
Right.
So there are times I have to have tough conversations with people and say, look, I just don't think your book has the potential to be a commercial success in that way.
Yeah.
That said, you know, making money and getting a major publishing deal is not the only reason to write a book. So there are many people who choose to write a book for other reasons and choose to do it anyway, even if they're not going to make money out of it. And so I do work with people like that. I'm certainly not one of those collaborators who only work on big commercial books. I work on all kinds of books, and some of them are passion projects related to an important mission that the author really wants to get the word out about. And I love doing those kinds of books too. So it varies a lot, but there are many reasons to write a book.
So what I hear you just say, and I can testify to, folks, you don't write a book to make money. I think there were 300,000 books published just on Amazon last year, and less than 1% sold 100,000 copies, and maybe two or three sold 1 million copies. And even at that, you're not making much money when you sell a book. So FYI. So you have to have now there are good reasons to write a book. Can you come up with a few for the audience? What's a good reason to write a book? If you're not doing it for the money, why else would you write a book?
Sure. I mean, I think credibility is a big one, especially if you end up with a established publishing house publishing your book. You know, people say that the age of the book is over and we're moving into the digital era and books don't matter the way they did. But it still seems to me to be the case that a book is an important unit of culture. It's a stamp of credibility and approval, especially when traditionally published. So if you have an idea or a message that you want to establish yourself as the expert on, then obviously having a book published gives it that stamp of credibility. It also can enable you to sort of claim certain ideas that it might be hard for you to go out there and trademark a certain broader system of thought. But if you publish a book about that, just like your creation frequency, it gives you some degree of ownership where at least somebody would have to think twice before going and copying those.
Right.
So I think those are two reasons that people do it. And of course, there's just the reason of, you know, having a book enables you to speak to people that you wouldn't otherwise be able to reach just yourself going out and working one-on-one. So for a lot of people, having that opportunity to sort of capture their message and be able to spread it to a broader audience is probably the biggest reason they do this.
Yeah. So it really becomes a business card at some point and puts you in an expert type of person in whatever you write about. So I see that. The other thing, so Love or Living in Color, which is the memoir that we wrote, for me, that's more of a legacy book. That's more of a labor of love. That's more of, hey, I got to write this story, right? To honor someone that was dear to me. And so in that book, you know, obviously I want to get in as many hands as possible just so their hearts could be touched like mine was. But there are people that just write like a legacy book or just want to create a record of their life, right? But once again, folks, that's not for money. So elaborate a little bit on that, why you would write a legacy book like that.
Yeah, people do that sometimes because they just feel there's a story that they need to tell. Sometimes it's even more of a process of, it's part of their own therapeutic process, if you like, right, or part of their growth process, just to put that story on paper. Sometimes it helps them grieve if the book is about a loss, or it might help them understand themselves if they're writing about their childhood or their past or their family, the family history. There's a lot of reasons people might do that. Sometimes people want to write a book for the generations that follow. All of those are good reasons to do it. And my mother-in-law was a wonderful writer, and she took memoir classes for many years, and she used to write these beautiful stories from her childhood, and she self-published those books. And they're such a treasure to her family, and she passed away a couple of years ago, and we all have been rereading those stories ever since. And I just feel so grateful she published those books and made them available, and they give us an insight into who she was and the world she came from that was so different than the world we live in. So I think there's all kinds of reasons to publish a book. And the good news today is there are so many ways to publish a book that don't require you to get past those gatekeepers that sit at the gates of traditional publishing. So if you're writing a book and you're not doing it necessarily to make money or to establish credibility in the sense that you might need a traditional publisher, there are many ways that you can publish a book, self-publish, or work with a small publisher or a hybrid publisher that will get your book out there and make it available to the people you want to reach without you having to spend enormous amounts of money or overcome huge hurdles to get a publishing deal.
So let's say someone comes to you and they have a fascinating story. And so you say, yeah, that's a great story. And, you know, I want to write this book with you. Tell me your process. When you go home, now you've kind of heard the story. How does it come to be in your mind? What's the first thing you do?
For me, it's really important to spend time with the author initially. And especially if it's a story-driven book, if it's a personal book, like your book. I mean, you know as well as I do, I hesitated to write that book, right, because when we started, I was more of a, you know, I write business books and self-help books and health books. I hadn't written many memoirs. I'd coached a couple of authors writing memoirs, but I didn't feel like that sort of deeply personal storytelling was my strength. I wasn't sure I could do it, quite frankly. And I know you had been working with somebody else, and I was working with you on your self-help book. And for me, diving into something that personal and that narrative-driven was a challenge. So the most important thing to me was to spend a lot of time talking to you about the story and understanding the voice and the emotion that was underlying it. In your case, I think also what really helped was having a lot of documents from the times we were writing about. There's nothing like having that, the material that's captured at the time. You know, memory is one thing, but in your case, you had written emails to family and friends throughout the period that we were writing about that actually documented in real time the events that we wanted to capture in the book. And Margot had written journals, and we had letters, and we had various artifacts from the times we were writing about that really brought it alive for me. And I was able to use the words from those to capture the immediacy of those experiences. So that was a very critical part of the process for me.
Yeah. And I think your brilliance is you have the ability to paint a picture so that the reader can actually see it. And the other thing you mentioned was, you know, the cathartic experience, the healing experience, mm-hmm. because, you know, when we started writing Love Unfiltered, it was probably just, you know, 18 months to 2 years after my wife had passed on. And so and then, you know, you and I would meet and we go through all these stories and you would come back with this beautiful prose. Literally, I mean, the crying that took place, you know, for me in that process, was extremely healing, painful, you know, but grief is painful, ladies and gentlemen, I think it really helped to heal. So even if you're not going to write a book, just write in your diary, get your feelings out of here so you can stay healthy and well and continue to grow through the grief process. How do you see the publishing world today and where it was, where it's going? How do you see all that?
Great question. It still seems to be thriving despite all predictions to the contrary, which I'm happy about. And I still think there are a lot of great books being written and read and sold. one trend I do see, you know, on the one hand, as I said, there's been this rise of self-publishing, which I think is a wonderful thing for a lot of authors. It used to be this sort of, you know, there was vanity publishing, as they called it, and it had kind of a stigma of shame attached to it.
Right, right.
These days, it's perfectly legitimate to self-publish, and it really doesn't have that stigma anymore. And I think that's allowed this flourishing of all kinds of different voices that maybe were not given a place in the traditional publishing world. So I think that's been a wonderful thing. Traditional publishing itself, what I've observed recently, and I'm certainly not the only person to say this, is that I think there's been a real loss of opportunity for newer authors in traditional publishing. I think it's getting harder and harder for somebody who doesn't have an already established platform, which means, you know, mailing lists and social media presence and audience and ways they can go out and sell a book right now. If they don't have that in place when they go to a publishing house, it's very hard to convince the publisher to take a chance on them just because they've got a great story or a great message. That's always been the case, but I think it's getting harder and harder. Publishers tend to throw a lot of money at the sure bets, you know, the movie star books, the Obamas books. You know, I think they paid $65 million for those two books by the Obamas. And yet it's very hard for a first-time author with a really strong and powerful message to get a $20,000 advance these days. Hmm. So that's a challenge, I think. And as the big publishers have bought up more and more of the small independent publishers and sort of absorb them into these big conglomerate publishing houses, there are less of those sort of in-between places for authors who might have enough of a message and a platform to not necessarily need to self-publish, but maybe don't have the big platform to be the sure bet. So I do see it being a challenge for those sort of authors in the middle.
Yes.
And I work with a lot of people like that, and it's hard because I wish they had more avenues to sort of build up their career as an author. You know, it's hard because the publisher sort of wants you to already have everything in place before you start. But for the authors, they often see the book as being a key step to building that platform. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation for first time.
Well, that was the valuable lesson I learned, because, you know, you know, you put all this time, energy, effort into writing a book. Oh, we're done. That's like 10% of the battle, folks. Yeah. Now you got to find a way to get it out of your hand into other people's hands. And that's yeah, the real challenge that Ellen was just speaking about. We have to take a short break. When we come back, I happen to know that Ellen actually lives with a published author, and I'd be curious to know what that's like, if there's any competition in the house. So ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're glad you're here with us today. And we have a special guest, Ellen Daly, a great author, co-creator of many people's books. And she happens to be married to an author, Carter, who wrote a book called Evolutionaries. I think it came out in 2012. So here's what's interesting. So is the author that put all his time, effort into writing this book, and he had a real publisher and it did very well, but I think Ellen's the one in the family making the most money writing books for other people. So I'm curious how that works for you guys. And I know Carter's helping you with your projects now, so you have, you know, twice the power for the same punch. But how is that living with a author and all the ups and downs of getting that book out? Share that with us.
It's a great question. Well, Carter and I actually met when I was his copy editor, which meant that I was the nasty person with the red pen who would take his articles. He was a journalist in those days, and I would take his articles and, you know, fix up his sentences and tell him they were too long and tell him he couldn't mix his metaphors and he wasn't allowed to use three different adjectives to mean the same thing. And we fell in love through that process. So we always thought that if that was possible, despite the fact that I was editing his work, we had a pretty good chance of, you know, succeeding at marriage. And we've now been married almost 16 years. When he wrote his book, I certainly played a key role in that. And I was very excited to be part of that. It was one of the first books I worked on that was sold to a traditional publisher. We were published by HarperCollins. And, you know, we wrote the proposal. We holed up for a weekend in some little cabin in upstate New York and wrote that proposal and sold it to the publisher. So that was a wonderful experience. It certainly wasn't easy getting it done. I think the most challenging time was the probably 13th hour when we realized all the little citations in the back hadn't been done correctly. And we had to go through and track down all those quotes that were sort of tucked away in some book somewhere and figure out what page they came from and all of that. That was a bit challenging. And we also had to take 30,000 words out of the final manuscript, which was a big challenge. It's much easier to write a long book than to write a short one. But that being said, it was a great process. And we've always loved collaborating. We really enjoy working together. And I feel very lucky to live with and work with somebody who understands the business I'm in. As you mentioned, in the last few years, he's also collaborated with me on several ghostwriting and collaborative projects. We worked together on the Whole Foods Diet for John Mackey, which was wonderful. And Carter is now, he's not working for me at the moment. He's actually working on his second book, which is going to be co-authored with John Mackey and another author, Steve McIntosh, and they're writing a book on conscious leadership for the business community.
Great.
So that's going to be exciting. That has a publisher. It's going to be published by Penguin, and we're really excited that that'll be out, I think, in 2020. So he's back in his author's cave, and I am trying to keep the ghostwriting side of things going. But I mean, we're very lucky that we enjoy working together, and it's nice that we understand each other's business so well.
That's awesome. That's awesome you guys have that type of partnership and can do these great works. There's a myth about the lonely writer. Maybe that's Carter right now. So can you elaborate what the myth of the lonely writer is?
Yes, sure. I actually would love to read a quote, because this is what I always turn to when I'm talking about the lonely writer myth. This is a quote from the novelist Graham Greene, who is obviously a wonderful writer. And he said, "If you can't stand your own company alone in a room for long hours, or when it gets tough, the feeling of being in a locked cell, or when it gets tougher still, the vague feeling of being buried alive, then don't be a writer." So I think that is some people's experience of what it takes to be a writer. And there've been some amazing writers like Graham Greene who have to go through that in order to produce their great works of art. And I salute all those people. But I also think that sometimes that myth has become intimidating for people who want to write a book and maybe don't need to lock themselves up in a cell in order to do that. And I think people have this idea in their head that if they want to be a writer, that's what it takes. And it's this solo journey, and it is a very lonely road. And part of my message to people in all kinds of different forms when I speak about writing is, it doesn't have to be a solo journey. There are a lot of ways you can collaborate. And that doesn't just mean hiring somebody like me as a ghostwriter or a co-author. It might be that you have a writing buddy who you work with. It might be that you have a writing group that you use as a sounding board and to help you in your creative process. You might use your social media channels or different audiences you work with as part of your creative process. There's a lot of ways that you can invite people in and source ideas, source inspiration, without losing your own authentic voice and without losing the fact that these are your ideas. So that's a lot of what my work is also focused on, is just encouraging people to not assume they have to do this alone. I wrote an ebook a few years ago that has 10 different collaborative processes you can try if you don't want to write alone. And I think there are a lot of ways people don't necessarily even think of as collaboration that actually do involve inviting other people into your creative process and free you up from that writer's cave. So,
Ellen, where could our listeners find that ebook that you wrote?
That ebook is available on my website, which is ellendaly.com. That's ellendaly.com. And if you just put /ebook or click the link on the homepage, you will get to a page where you can download that.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. There's some help if you're interested in writing a book and not having to spend a lot of money on someone to help you. There's a lot of ideas where you can still get the end result that you desire without spending a lot of money. Speaking of money, you've become so successful and your charge has gone way up, what you charge to collaborate with people. So let's say that I can't afford that. How would I go about finding someone else to co-create a book for me? How would I find another ghostwriter?
Well, there's a huge range in this business. And as you say, I've been lucky enough to kind of rise to the top of the field. And so I am fairly expensive, but I know a lot of people who charge a quarter of my rates or even less, people who are just starting out. And oftentimes they're people who are wonderful writers and maybe have a real career as a journalist or a writer, but are trying to break into ghostwriting and they are, you know, they need to build up their resume so they don't charge as much. There are a lot of agencies out there that handle ghostwriters. I don't think those are always the best way to go. It's an interesting question. How can you find somebody? If people want to reach out to me through my website, I am a member of many groups where I know there's a lot of wonderful writers. These are not public groups, so I would have to post something. But if you are interested in finding a writer and you want to reach out to me, you can do that through my website, ellendaly.com, and I'd be happy to try and put you in touch with somebody. I don't know if there are public, you know, there aren't really ghostwriters websites, or it's one of those things that it's quite, because it's not a profession that has been traditionally sort of in the light of day, it can be a little hard to find the right person. But I also encourage people to talk to people they know who've written books, because one of the things that you'll be surprised to find is that probably, I would say the majority of nonfiction books have had some form of collaborator work on them. Many, many more than you might think. They might not always call that person a ghostwriter, but that person might have been a coach, they might have been an editor, and they might have done most of the writing. If you know people who've written books, ask them. They may well be able to recommend someone. And if you have books that you really like, go look in the acknowledgements. If you read closely, you can usually figure out who the collaborator or even the ghostwriter was. They generally won't be called that. Nobody has a ghostwriter write their book and then says in their acknowledgments, thank you to my ghostwriter. But you'll find phrases like, you know, thank you to so-and-so who helped make my words sing, or thank you to so-and-so who turned my ramblings into beautiful prose. Or so, there'll be phrases like that. I know you've written them for me, Mike. And many of my clients, I've had many beautiful things like that said, that if you know what you're looking for, you can always find them. You know, as a collaborator and a ghostwriter myself, when I get a new book, I always go to the acknowledgements first, just to see if I can figure out who really did the writing and who was there behind the scenes. So I think that's another way you can do it. You can find a name and then look that person up. And if it's a book that you enjoyed, then the likelihood is you'll be able to find the person who worked on that. So,
yeah. So, and I'll tell you folks, if I hadn't met Ellen, because finding the right person to co-create with you is not easy, but you can do some searches on Google as well, questions to ask a potential ghostwriter. But if I hadn't met you, I would still be writing my first book, Love Unfiltered, because it's so time consuming, you know, and a guy like me who's more of a perfectionist, you know, and isn't that greatly skilled as well. I'm more of a storyteller than an actual writer. We've now written three books, we've published two, and we're almost done with our fourth. So for me, this is a much better process because I got a million other things going on. And I think there's a lot of people that might fit in this category. A lot of people will say to me, I'd love to write a book, but I don't have the time. And I say, you know, hey, find someone to co-collaborate with. And you tell the story, but then have someone help you put it on paper. And so that's been my the reason I've been able to finish books, thanks to you, Ellen. So I hope other people will reach out to you too. If you want a really fantastic, probably the best ghostwriter, co-creator of your material, you found her now. So it's ellendaly.com. And she's made some generous offers already today. So thank you for that, Ellen. We appreciate it. When we come back, we're going to take another short break. When we come back, I'm curious about blogging. And maybe for people that think they want to be an author, they can start with some blogging. At the same time, they're writing good content. They're getting better at their skill. They're getting feedback. They're not spending a lot of time and money to find out if they have this or if they like it. And at the same time, they'll be building their platform. So if they do write a book, it'll be all ready to go. So ladies and gentlemen, we're so grateful that you're here today, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mike Murphy Unfiltered Show. And we're speaking today with Ellen Daly, who has a beautiful career as a co-creative writing person, collaborating with many successful people in writing their story and putting the ink on the paper and then getting the book published. And when we just left you, I asked Ellen, we're going to get into blogging. Would that be a good idea? So let's say you're out there in the audience and you're thinking, yeah, I really want to write a book. I've always wanted to write a book. I hear that all the time. I just don't have the time, or I'm not sure how to do it. So what do you think about that, Ellen? If I want to be an author, but I'm not sure, and I want to see what it's like testing the waters with a blog.
Yeah, I think it's a fabulous idea. I encourage a lot of people to do that. As you mentioned, it's a way to both test the waters for yourself and see if you like the writing process and how that flows for you, and also to do it in a way where you get feedback. You know, you publish those posts, you get comments, you can circulate them among your friends, your family, your audience, get their input. And I think it's a wonderful way to sort of test the waters as a writer and at the same time build up content. You might decide when you've written, you know, 20, 30 blogs, if you write, let's say you write 500 word blog posts, if you write, you know, you write 100 of those, you've got enough material for a book. You might decide at that point you want to just take those blog posts and turn them into your book. You might decide you want to hand them over to somebody like me or another type of editor or collaborative writer who can take those that material and turn it into a book. It might not be able to be published just as it is, but I love it when I start working with an author and they come to me with a lot of stuff they've already written. Then I'm not starting with a blank page. I have so much opportunity then to get to know their content. So I think blogging is a great way to test the waters. And if you don't like to write, maybe you do it in some audio form. Maybe you do a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's another way to get your ideas out there, create content that could later be turned into a book.
Yeah. And once you do that, folks, it's really easy to get them, that podcast transcribed. It doesn't cost very much at all. Now you have your content in written form as well. Great idea, Alan. So I'm curious. So let's say you're going to write your own book. And so you already know your story and you're intimate with it. What's the first thing you do? Is it chapter outlines or tell me the nuts and bolts of writing a book.
Yeah. So outlining is definitely a good place to start. And the way I think about outlining is a process I call book mapping. And the reason I call it that is because I like to think of the outline as a map that guides your reader on a journey. So before you can create an outline, you really need to know who your reader is. And so when I work on this process with clients, I spend some time having them really think about the person they want to read the book, really envision that person, understand them. Who are they? What do they care about? Why would they pick up this book? Why do you want to speak to them? And once you feel like you have a picture of that person, and you can even, you know, go online and find a picture of someone, or you might pick somebody you know who's like your ideal target reader, really get a visual, get a sense of this, as much information about this person as you can. And then ask yourself, you know, what are the problems, questions, issues that might drive them to pick up my book? And write a list of those. You know, where are they emotionally, psychologically, in their life, in their career? Where are they when they're picking up my book? How do I describe this person? And then where do I want them to go to when they get to the end of my book? Where do I want them to be in relationship to those? It might be they'll have a solution to this problem, or they'll have a better understanding of these issues, or they'll have progressed from this point in their career to that point in their career. Map out some sort of journey so you have a start point and a desired end point. And when you've got those two things in place, then your outline becomes it's literally the map that gets you from point A to point B. And so you can start to map that journey with milestones. Start out just thinking, well, what would be the first step? If this person starts out with this problem or this question, what's the first piece of information I need to give them? What's the second? Perhaps, well, first I need to tell them who I am, because otherwise they're not going to know why they should trust me. Then I may need to tell them where I started out so they can understand that I had similar problems to the ones they have. Then I may need to take them through my 5-step process or whatever that is. And then I may need to help them see this new place that they are in at the end and know how to implement that in their life. So you'll map out that journey with milestones. And eventually then those milestones will turn into chapters. They might not be exactly one milestone per chapter, but this is a method that enables you to create a chapter outline for your book that has a direction. And this works particularly well with a prescriptive book, whether it's a business book, a health book, a self-help book, a spiritual book, something that has something to teach. This method really helps you take somebody on a transformational journey. If the book is a memoir, it might be a little different, because then you're looking at what's the arc of the narrative, what's the best way to tell the story, and it might not just be one chronological line. When we worked on the memoir together, you'll probably remember we ended up with sort of two parallel timelines where we were writing one sort of section of the story and then flashing back to to the things that came in the past. So that's a different process for this. It's almost more like a screenwriting type of construction where you really think about the sort of visual flow of your narrative and the keeping the tension there in the narrative. But I think creating an outline is a really great place to start.
I'm curious. So you stepped out of your comfort zone to write this memoir. And how was that experience? And did you like it? And would you write another memoir after having done one?
Yes, it was a great experience. It gave me a lot of confidence, actually. I enjoyed it tremendously. I felt like it was a different type of creative, it was different creative satisfaction than I get from the other types of books I write. Often I'm trying to express things clearly and engagingly and teach people.
You're trying to teach, right? And rather than tell.
Which is wonderful. And I enjoy that. But this was really, I felt like I was putting on a different hat and really trying to set scenes and trying to bring people into the emotional experience of the story. And I really found that I enjoyed it. And all of the feedback we got as people read it, you know, I made my husband cry every time I gave him a chapter to read. You know, it gave me confidence that that I could do this. And I felt, so I was very grateful to have the opportunity to write that book because I felt like it actually showed me that I could be that type of writer too. And I have written another one since. I actually just finished a memoir, very different, completely different type of story. Yours was more of a, it was a love story. It was a cancer story. It was a transformational story. This book was about, I mean, it's a life story and a career story, but it's also a story that's very much connected to business and finance and a big insider trading court case. So I had to write weeks and weeks of a legal trial and write a courtroom scene, which was really an interesting and
more drama, I would think. Although we had drama in our book, but a different type of drama, right? Yeah.
It was a different type of drama. I had to write scenes in jail. My client spent time in prison. Mm. So I had to write those scenes and what it was like to be in solitary confinement. So it was a fascinating experience. And I think writing your book was a lot of what gave me the confidence to take on a project like that. So these days I really enjoy memoir and I hope that I'll be doing more.
Cool. I got to know, what was it like for him in solitary confinement?
Oh, he said it was very transformational, actually. He is of Indian origin and he took the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Indian,
their spiritual, book,
Indian Bible. Spiritual text, you know, sort of similar to the Bible in that sense. And he studied it and he used that time as sort of a spiritual retreat and found it quite transformational. Not that it wasn't extremely challenging, but I think it was a very, very pivotal.
Yeah. So I was curious because, you know, because of what I've gone through, I have no fear of death, but I do have some fears around solitary confinement or being in prison or being tortured. Okay. So we only have a couple minutes left. And I know that you had a very similar experience to me where I lost my wife, but you lost someone very dear to yourself. And then just like I did, your father found a silver lining in that. Can you elaborate for us?
Yes. My youngest sister, Bryony, was diagnosed with cancer for the first time at the age of 9 when I was about 13. And she went through 3 rounds of that and she passed away at the age of 23. That was about, it was in 2004. So it's been a while now. But my father was probably the most instrumental in trying to figure out how we could help her. Obviously, she had a lot of conventional medicine. It was, in some ways, I think it saved her life, but in the end, it also cost her her life. The radiation she received in those days was very high dosage, and her second and third cancers were caused by the radiation. They were bone cancers. So we really experienced the conundrum of these medicines that are there to save lives and that do save lives also have a very high cost. And so, especially in her final round with cancer, my father became very passionate about finding alternative treatments and complementary treatments and integrative treatments that might be less stressful on her body, particularly for someone who'd gone through so much treatment. And so after she passed away, he turned that into a nonprofit called Yes to Life. It's a UK-based nonprofit, yestolife.org.uk. And they do wonderful work providing a lot of information primarily, but also funding and support for people going through cancer journeys. And they published a book about 2 years ago, I think, called The Cancer Revolution, which I was happy to help and provide some editing for. And that's a wonderful book that really just helps people navigate this confusing world. Because I think, I'm sure as you know, there's so much out there, but it's very hard to tell.
Discern.
hard to discern what's really good information and what's not, and what's going to be helpful and what's not. And I think people need that kind of guidance. So that's what he's doing. Yeah.
Ellen, I applaud you, your family, and your dad, who I got to meet, and I applaud him for the wonderful work he's doing. And folks, if you want to support a beautiful nonprofit foundation that's legitimate and real and really doing good work and not stealing money and helping people, support that one and check it out and check out the book. And stay tuned. We're going to take a break at the top of the hour. We're going to come back next hour with an amazing publisher, Mark Allen, amazing author, beautiful man. And Ellen, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
We'll be right back, folks.
You've been listening to Mike Murphy, unfiltered, unfettered, unflinching, unafraid, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in, and don't miss the next unfiltered show next Thursday from noon to 2 Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com, as Mike Murphy and a cast of powerful guests strip away the veil of limitation using the groundbreaking practices of the creation frequency. Tune in to unleash the power of your mind. Open the immense energy of the heart to manifest an awesome life filled with true health, wealth, confidence, gratitude, and joy. Unfiltered truth, unfiltered frequency, unfiltered possibilities on Mike Murphy Unfiltered Radio. For more information on Mike and his work, visit MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com.